Okay, so supporting mortgages and trying to help people get a mortgage is something you do as a kindness to those people beneath you. And if you've always grown up, I've always grown up thinking mortgages were something you're bloody lucky to be able to get, right? It's a shock, but you can see their point of view. But what I'm trying to say is that kind of thing, that kind of division in thinking can only happen when you have big divisions between people. When wages and salaries and wealth is much more equal, it's much easier to understand the society you're in. It's difficult to understand our society, for all of us, because we're not going to understand people much worse off than us that necessarily well. We might emphasise and so on, we might have been poor once ourselves. The chances of us being that poor now are pretty low. And we'll find it hard to put ourselves in the shoes of people with a lot more than us and have any sympathy for them claiming that things are hard for them ever. And that isn't a problem that people have in a normal rich country, let alone the much more equitable. Nowhere else has £9,000 a year fees. In Finland I think it's still free. In Germany it's a few hundred pounds. The states do, but the states have lower now than us. We've jumped over the states because states have a whole range of provisions, so they're much cheaper. The states have some truly awful provision. So they have provision where only 20% of the student fee is paid on teaching, more is paid on marketing, because it makes sense if you're a private university to spend more on marketing your courses than actually teaching, just 20%. And the majority of students bail out. So there are bad things in the States, but also in the States, they have systems where people begin to save their children's education from birth. So you can literally buy tutorials of your one-year-old. I mean, I think this is terrible, but I think it's even worse to give a child it's not a £27,000 debt, it's a £50,000 debt. Mm-hmm. You're choosing a 17. You know. Yeah. The point about this, what we've just done is quite incredible, but that kind of thing is possible in an equal country. It's easy to say bring in half of all beds possibly being pay beds in hospitals if the group of people making the decisions are used to using pay beds and would like other people to have the access to pay beds because pay beds are good. The majority of the Lords who contributed on the debate about whatever they called the privatisation of the NHS, Health and Social Care Act, had a personal interest in a private healthcare company of some kind. But from their point of view, they'll say their interest is about helping people create a more efficient health system, because private is better and the market is good. This is a wealth inequality measure. Wealth does better than income for these things. And this is life expectancy. It's a paper that came out 2012. And there you've got Japan, there you've got the USA, and interestingly there you've got Denmark. Denmark's always confused inequality researchers because it was the outlier. You know, why were people dying earlier in Denmark, given it has relatively low income inequality? And superficially, it's smoking. It's why do people in Denmark smoke more? Knowing that there's very high inequalities in wealth in Denmark may help a bit. But just to show you that relationship. There's a lovely data set in Paris. If you just type top income data set Paris into Google, you'll find all the data about the 1% over time for rich countries. It's got five poorer countries in, which just happened. That's life expectancy and how much the 1% get. It's random that they shouldn't line up that well. I mean, it's suspicious that they do, but it is interesting that even for these countries where the idea that inequality is necessarily bad isn't that strong, you still get them lining up. And here's all the richer countries, where it's a weaker relationship. But the US with the lowest life expectancy, Japan with the highest. But a bit of variation going on. Too many of these. Infant mortality and wealth inequality. So the US having twice as much infant mortality as Japan. Infant mortality in the US is currently rising slightly, I think. It's certainly rising for babies of black mums. And in the UK, we've had a big increase in people dying over the age of 85. Have any of you heard about this? Last 18 months, mainly women. Not just because there are more women over 85, but having taken into that account, there's far too many, there should be more men, and there's not. So the suspicion of when you know, and it's huge, crudely put, is that it's a Harold Shipman every 2 weeks of excess mortality of women. The suspicion is that it's to do with being single. You're much, much more likely to be single as a woman over 85 than a man. You're then much more vulnerable to what goes on inside. It's easier as a couple to cope with things. Public Health England say it's the flu and cold weather. But we'll see, because of course but it coincides. Yeah, exactly. And even if it is the flu, and they haven't tested, as far as I can see, any blood samples to say it is the flu. Even if it is the flu, they actually cut the flu jabs last Christmas as well. So you've got to say, always say, you know, when people say people smoke more, you say, why are they smoking more? Why are they dying of the flu? Why did you cut the flu jabs? My suspicion is I think it's likely to be psychosocial, which if you've read the Spirit Level book, if anybody, that says psychosocial is very, very, very important. I differ slightly from the author, just thinking it's very important, but there are these many other reasons as well. And this is a hard thing about trying to put yourself into somebody else's shoes. If you were an 87 or 90 year old woman living through the last few years, okay, your Meals on Wheels being cut or something else not happening, or your person coming for 15 minutes rather than 30 minutes might matter, or your care home going bankrupt and you thinking you have to move, that might all matter. But I think even bigger than that, just a sense of, oh my God, I've been here too long and this is just awful. And the reason why I think that might be, but I wish we could find a way to show this, is that the opposite happened in 1946 and 47. There was a massive reduction in mortality amongst the elderly in Britain. All before the NHS came in 48 and before pensions came in. But people knew it was coming in. And so the sense of optimism, particularly for the very old, that you were no longer going to be a burden on your family. Suicide rates, I think, more than halved in a few years for the elderly. In those mid years of the 40s. So if that was largely psychosocial, it's worth hanging on. You could imagine a sort of similar thing.
Why do you think that psychosocial doesn't happen to men though? Why don't they think I've been here too long?
That. No, good point. Well, in the 80s you had this big increase in suicide for young men. And there was a big decrease in suicide of young men after Blair was elected. So whatever you are, I don't particularly like New Labour, but it had an amazing charismatic effect, 97, 98, 99, of things are going to get better. This is all talking about an 86-year-old man not making it to 90, or an 8... You've almost certainly got a wife with you or somebody. It's much more likely to have one. Also, the wife will probably be younger. It's not only on average will she live 5 years longer than you.
Oh, yes, yeah, so you weren't just looking at the single people.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, no, when you think about when people... But this particular cohort, so it's my granddad's cohort, they went courting and got married in the 30s. Mm-hmm. And the age gap between men and women got really wide then, because you couldn't get a job and so on. You weren't allowed to marry till you had a proper... I mean, I'll give you another one for I used to do this field trip with students, this is a particularly morbid one, but I do this stuff on health, of taking them to graveyards. And it makes them think. And you get them to, you've got to be careful there's no funeral going on. you get them to measure gravestones, because of course the richest people live longer and they build themselves very big gravestones. But also often husbands and wives were buried together. Mm-hmm. So you can see the gap. And then if you've got a long time with the students and they're keen, they can record enough of these and see how the gap at marriage altered. And in economically good times, when you could get a job, get out. Particularly the 70s. 70s were brilliant for this, and the 60s. You know, people were getting married in their early 20s and having kids. Yeah. And then they die.
The incidence of mental health, especially severe depression, in elderly people is quite significant, isn't it? And I'm not sure if it's reported more in women than men, but I know the figures are really quite high.
Yeah.
And I wonder if there's, as you're saying, you know, there's this connection between severe depression and the isolation,
yeah,
and the physical factors that go with that disability.
Yeah.
I was going to say about the social capital, social cohesion factors as well, because for elderly ladies that are on their own and their children live, they're more dispersed. I think certainly a report I heard, I think it was Professor John Ashton that was speaking, and they were looking at whether there were factors to do with infectious diseases that they hadn't even identified, geographical clustering, cancer and all sorts of things. One of the things that came across from some women that they interviewed was very much about that vulnerability, fear of crime, fear of, so they became more geographic, more isolated within their home because of being female and frightened, and their children lived away, and that certainly had an effect on their mood and their mental health, more so than men in equivalent situations.
Yeah. I mean, it should. This is the first rise in mortality we've had since the 1930s. Right? It's sustained and it's big and it's been going on for the last 2 years. It's the first rise in any rich country since the 30s, apart from the US in 2008, just at the end of the Bush era of cuts. So it ought to be an absolute priority for being examined. And what you got is the Public Health England released a report on the 15th of August, in the middle of sea season, slapping down the one NHS researcher who'd been releasing these numbers every week and telling him not to do it, and saying it's probably the flu and stop worrying. And that's the era where...
Have they also looked at senile dementia, all the different types of dementias?
How that could
affect mortality.
But you wouldn't expect an increase.
No.
And you're not seeing it in other countries. Mm-hmm. It will come out. I mean, it will. John Ashton is interesting. He's now president of the Faculty of, not Public Health, but something similar. He's got at least 4 years left of his presidency. There's somebody at London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine who's also written about it recently, who became famous studying mortality going up absolutely in Russia. You know, of more and more men dying at younger ages, but they hit the bottle after. Now this is tiny compared to that, but it's the first place in Western Europe. And it just...
So I'm just going to say there's been a huge incidence in people drinking alcohol in their later years, maybe, you know, that'd be
fun. I think the thing about couples,
you
clearly would feel less vulnerable if you were part of a couple.
Yeah.
And there are fewer widowers or whatever than to the way around.
Yeah. It's the fact that it's people over 85 as well, isn't it? If it was people in the 40s or children, it'd be headline news and people
view,
but because it's old people.
There is this similarity.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah. Or people feel guilty because they weren't visiting the old person that much and they don't first. I mean, I must admit, I got a shock when I saw the figures. Mm-hmm. I had assumed that we would get, after 2008, big increase in heroin use, big increase in suicides amongst young people who couldn't get a job, just like the 80s. Mm. Right? No sign of it. We're just beginning to get a few more burglaries now. It's taken ages. You'd expect to get more burglaries now. But no big new influx of drugs. Nothing for the young has not yet happened. And it was only, I wasn't looking at this age group at all. It was the figures coming out. It does show kind of.
I used to work in a care home, and we had a big increase in deaths in that time. But you just thought it was a, you wouldn't, you, I'd never realised that it was part of a bigger yeah. picture.
I think a lot of
and there was no one thing, it was just...
I just think that as the provision for Meals on Wheels, which was a reasonably balanced meal, decreases and people are just saying, well, just microwave something. As long as you can microwave something, then you'll be all right. They're eating ready meals, which are oversalted. They're not eating fresh vegetables to go with it. And if they are eating vegetables, they're eating frozen and just re-eating. And I just think the general quality of food that all the people who are eating is deteriorating.
Yeah.
And then they have a bout in hospital. They come out with malnutrition. There's no provision when they get home to pick that up again, to get them back on, get their diet. And I just think that that's a major contributor to mortality. Mm-hmm. People, they're not eating as well. Yeah. And as soon as they become unable to cook for themselves, the state used to maybe provide them with a decent meal, but doesn't anymore. One of the major areas of cutbacks is on mobile meals. The eligibility criteria is up there. If you can stick something in a microwave, you do not get a meal provision. Mm-hmm. And that leaves you back on ready meals. And we all know what ready meals are made out of.
Yeah. Yeah, and if it were to make you more depressed, or you just decide, I'm not eating this.
Or you don't feel very well that day, and you can't just get it in the microwave.
I had thought we'd get a sort of series of a story a week coming out, in the papers. And we have had stories, but the problem with the stories is they're all so individualistic. So the one that's in my mind the most is of one old lady who did starve to death, whose carers stopped coming round. Mm-hmm. But she starved because the border agency had deported them. And then it... Let's click through. Never guess where. Those are people in... This is a big jump. These are a family in Singapore last year looking at the Titanic exhibition, which was... These are the list of survivors. First class, second class, and so on. And third class, most people died. The reason for showing that is that that family in Singapore will not have realised that Singapore is now as unequal as Britain was when the Titanic sank. Highlight, like, show my weird. Here's another picture. I like these graphics. If any of you see any of these kind of graphics, please email them to me. I think this is poor old Stephen Hester. He's now not. Do you know even know what his job is now? Now we've got that new New Zealander. Has he got a job?
No.
Poor, I felt really sorry for it when he said that his parents were ashamed of him. But this is showing income inequality by making the size of the person. So that's a nurse. That's a doctor. That's a cleaner.
Cleaner,
nurse, school teacher, army corporal, police sergeant, consultant, doctor. Stephen Hester.
It really does make a point, though, about the
police sergeant.
Think that consultants were pretty much a lot bigger than the cleaners, but when you compare it to the 1%,
Although I suspect, that says 80.
Half as much again, at least.
This is a variation you get, you see, because a GP could be anything from 60 to 120, 130, partly depending on how greedy you are. I mean, that's, what our society has changed into. But a consultant will say, I'm a consultant, I've spent my life taking exams until my 40s, it was bloody hard work, and you give me this, I'll double that. But he's getting this. And to be honest, 2 million is nothing for the CEO of a bank. That's a miserable wage. For the CEO of a bank, I bet that's the lowest of any large bank in the world, and he's the one who's had the most grief about. And this is the mess I think you get into.
I think you can't understand how rich they are, and when you say, the Russian oligarchs aren't even in it, I don't think we have any understanding at all of the amount of money that's slushing around them.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? That they can have anything. They can have yachts that are as big as cruise ships, if they want. Well, what's his name? Abramovich has, hasn't he? I mean, it's a huge multi-story thing. I'm going back to put it in a cellar.
Let's... What am I jumping to now? We're almost there, aren't we? I'm going to give you 7 slides about things that are good about being a bit more equal, and then we'll stop for lunch. I'm not religious, I should say, because I scare anybody. Fine if you are religion. Lots of religions were created at times of great inequality. It's just interesting to see all those Romans being nasty. It's not just religions. It's worth looking at. Human history seems to be a kind of story as when we occasionally let the greedy people become more greedy and take lots of things, it takes a bit of time for us to stop them doing it again. And if you're getting upset about the state of Britain at the moment, the chances of it still being in this state at the time that your children or grandchildren are your age are pretty low on a statistical model. This is extreme, doesn't it? But only if you do something about it. Okay, what's this all about? Oh, there's lots of arguments. People often say you've got to be unequal because it helps the creative people. Japan has the most patents per head. Scandinavia produces the most scientific papers and so on. And there's a lovely story about how Leonardo da Vinci was allowed by the Medicis, who are not particularly nice, but to sit at the table and treated equally, which helped him get on with his art. I did a little book called The No-Nonsense Guide to Equality, so that's the reason for showing that this is saving you having to look at that. There's a brilliant story of it from statistical analysis by somebody at Harvard Business School, I think, of Italian football players. The brilliant thing about football players is that they know each other's salaries because they're published in the press. If you keep salaries secret, you can maybe get away with a bit of inequality. And what they found is that in the Italian football teams where they played one star player a lot and the other players were paid less, those teams did less well overall, and it was the equivalent of playing away from home at every match because it demoralised the other players, and they didn't play as well as a team or necessarily pass to the star player as much. But riots and other things going wrong. There's lots of works about society falling apart. The big collapse in housing wealth in the States has massively increased the gap between black and white families again. So you've got an average that's 19 times less wealth. And there's quite a lot of work about how riot increases and disorder increases and crime increases. There's my 40 to 40 infant mortality one. Lots of parts of the world may be becoming more equal now. It's not that inequalities are rising in general. Just like you saw Switzerland and the Netherlands, a lot of countries, the austerity measures are targeted more at the rich, simply because the rich actually have the money. One difficulty we had in Britain is that we were a richer country to begin with, and so it was possible to do the cuts. It's now 83% cuts, just 17% tax rises. So you could get them down. Whereas in places like Greece and other places along the south of the Mediterranean, your benefits were pretty miserable to begin with. So actually cutting them much more wasn't that easy. So in Greece, they're raising money through the electricity meters. And the more property you've got, the more you have to pay. This causes lots of upset in Greece. But for people who don't own property, they're less affected. In Spain, property prices are now worth half what they were in 2008, and in Ireland. Whereas in Britain, what did the government spend most money in the March budget on? It's home to, it's the buy to, yeah.
Buy to whatever it is.
Help to buy.
Help to buy.
12 billion, and it's another 10 billion for landlords. Billions of pounds spent keeping the London house market up. Which, you know, if the London house market halved in value, that would be the biggest increase in wealth inequality in Britain ever.
But no talk about regulating rent, which they removed, didn't they, in the 80s?
Yes. Oh yeah, and put housing benefit in.
Property in London is the council tax, because
when you look at those huge properties, and they still only pay marginally more than smaller, because the council tax, basically, unlike the rates, just let them off, didn't they, with a lot of...
Oh, yeah, it just stops at F, and it's... Yeah. I wish they would increase it. You just put in GHIJKL, put in more council tax. Rather than have a mansion tax.
Yeah.
If you put in all this, you can have a band, goes up to band N at about 30 million.
Yeah.
The Sultan of Brunei has got a property on Kensington Palace Gardens, and he claims a council tax rebate because he doesn't use it. He's making a statement, isn't he?
Not only does he claim it,
because, I mean, we all pay no income tax, don't we, really?
Yes.
And they say they'd never get elected if they put a thing up there. But not only does he claim it, somebody gives it to him.
Yeah.
And doesn't see the irony.
But this may be odd in that average wages and salaries are going down. House prices overall now, because of London and the South East, are going up. Rents are going up because the landlords are paying mortgages and the house prices are going up. And it can't carry on.
There's going to be nobody to service London. Because there's going to be nobody can afford, you know, other than the very rich, can afford to live in London anymore.
Yeah.
And with the transport costs, what they are. They need care assistants, nurses, home carers.
Anything could come.
The cleaners, where are they going to come from? You know,
yeah.
You can't commute from Luton to London. I mean, and Luton's pretty expensive as well.
Yeah.
It's just all things going to collapse. So complete collapse.
Just two more.
Okay.
Okay. I mean, this is all fairly idealistic, you know, and you know, and you can tell when my policy, but full employment. Can you remember when we had it? Some people. There was a time when if you didn't like your job, you told your boss what you thought of them, and you went and got another one.
Yeah.
That's called a really good working labour market. Mm-hmm. That's a well functioning market. We now have a higher wage bill than we had at the time of full employment. But a lot of that wage is going on the top 10% and top 1%. If we got back to inequalities of the 70s, you could have full employment. So take a university. University pays people like me more, pays my boss even more than me, so I don't feel too greedy. Pays her boss even more than her. If you were to bring all our salaries down, but preferably from the person at the top a bit more than me and so on, the amount of money we'd save, we could hire loads of people in their 20s to teach the students, and we'd bring the house prices down in the city. Because our main worry is, well, mine is how the hell am I going to manage to have a house? But you can't have full employment if you've got this great inequality. And lastly, what have we got? Oh yeah, walking to school. Yeah. And not be able to walk to school. Yeah, this is what I mean by the quirky one. So let's argue about this. This comes as a small town in Texas, where a proposal was made to build pavements. This is actually true. This wasn't that long ago, and the mayor of the town said, "We're not going to build pavements because it's the start of the slippery road down to welfare, collectivism, socialism, and communism." Whereas the car is good. School runs, I just think school runs are really interesting. If you think about how many parents are walking with their children from age 5 up to about age 11 now, often. So they're walking 4 times a day, to school, back from school, in the afternoon, to school, back from school, mainly women. In other countries which behave differently, more children walk to school on their own. And of course, more go to the nearest school. Because the other thing that's happened in Britain is your schools are becoming more and more divided. So you have people driving their kids past your kids to get to their expensive school in their 4x4. That's my personal extreme dislike. And you could just do something, for student topics, just something just on the how do children get to school in these different rich countries. And the one I'll end on is what happens in parts of Switzerland, and not all of Switzerland, when a child wants to cross the road. And what you do if you're a child, say 6 or 7 years, is you go to the edge of the road and you stand there, and you wait for a car to come. The car comes, the car sees the child and stops. That's just what's normal to do. And you still wait, and the car waits, until the car comes from the other direction and stops. You've got two cars have stopped, and a child walks across. Mm-hmm.